to order the Government Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee. Seeing that the only author that's present is Representative Morgan, we're going to put Representative Morgan up. Yep. Or you can present from there either one.
I'll go up there.
I think that's a good idea.
May I move my bill from here?
You can move it from wherever you wish. You're still a member of the committee, even in that chair.
I'll move HF 237 then.
And to where?
The General Register.
All right.
Passage in General Register.
So, Representative Morgan, identify yourself for the record, please, and then present your bill.
Thank you. Representative Will Morgan, and I'm here to present HF 237, and I have an amendment. I'd like to move the DE1 amendment.
Representative Morgan moves the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion. Oh, I can't. Representative Morgan, what we're going to do we have a quorum? We need one more. We don't have a quorum, Representative Morgan, so we're going to need one more. So why don't you describe your amendment, and then we'll just renew your motion when we get
okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, the DE1 amendment to HF 237 will help the bill address the following concerns. There are four concerns, and primarily this is a sunshine bill. To help cast some light onto our campaign finance process, particularly in the reporting process, as we head up to a primary or to the general election. There are four concerns specifically addressed in the bill and the amendment. First of all, the timely reporting of large contributions just before the election and modernization of the mechanism for reporting those large contributions. Second, the reporting requirements for new political funds or committees formed just before an election. Third, inconsistent reporting deadlines for the pre-primary report and the affidavit of contributions for participation in the public subsidy program. And finally, a fourth thing that it does is it lines up or makes more consistent the contribution limits for three of our statewide constitutional offices.
Representative Morgan, we have a quorum, so why don't you renew your motion on the DE1 amendment? And that, go ahead.
I'll renew my motion to amend HF 237 with the DE1 amendment.
Representative Morgan renews his motion. Is there any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Morgan, the bill is amended as you have described it. Do you have anyone to testify?
I have no testifiers. I'd like to go through a little bit of the details myself.
Sure.
As the amendment has just been before people, this will give them a chance to read it, and then we can. I'll answer some questions.
Okay.
First of all, as to the timely reporting of large contributions, because of the current timelines and guidelines for reporting, it has become too easy to circumvent the spirit of the law, that is to inform the public of the source of large contributions intended to influence the outcome of our elections. By tightening this timeline for reporting these large contributions to 24 hours from 48, and by modernizing the reporting methods to require reporting either in person or electronically, we will cast greater sunlight on campaign financing and spending. Secondly, a related point involves the formation of new political funds or committees right before the election. Because current law gives new committees 14 days to register with the campaign finance board after raising or spending $100. It is possible for new committees or funds to form right before the election, raise and spend large amounts of money to influence the election, again, circumventing the spirit of our campaign finance laws, though not the letter, and not report their existence or the source of their large contributions until well after Election Day. This bill would require new funds or committees that receive large contributions to file with the campaign finance board and report those contributions within 24 hours. Third, the pre-primary report and affidavit of contributions. Because the timelines currently for filing these two reports are not consistent, it is possible for campaigns, if they so desired, to hide fundraising and spending that would influence a primary election, but still submit an affidavit of contributions entitling candidates to public subsidy. This bill will sync up those deadlines and make everything more transparent before the primary. Finally, a fourth thing is that this syncs up the contribution limits for our statewide candidates for constitutional office. The maximum individual contributions allowed for Secretary of State candidates and State Auditor candidates currently is on the level of legislative candidates. Certainly, it's much more difficult to run a statewide campaign, and it often costs a lot more money. This will raise the maximum contribution level for those statewide candidates up to the level of the Attorney General, so that all three of those constitutional offices have the same limits for their maximum contributions. I do have Mike Franklin from the Chamber of Commerce, who is here, and now that he's here, I'd like to have him testify on behalf of my bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mike Franklin with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just wanted to say that the part of this bill that we really like is the increased disclosure. Following the 2004 election, we actually amended our elections policy at the Chamber to support something very similar, if not identical, to what Representative Morgan has brought in front of you today. And we would just say that we think that more disclosure is a good thing. When you're participating in elections, you like to know who's paying for what and as soon as possible. So we would support this bill and encourage you to vote for it.
Are there any questions? Representative Anderson.
Representative Morgan, can you tell me why you would want to limit the different methods of reporting that are available to individuals? Why only limit it to coming in person and to electronic means?
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. A couple of reasons. It's come to our attention that the current means allowed in law of reporting by, I think it's certified mail or telegram, seem to be a bit outdated with our current level of technology. We have more modern methods of reporting these, which are much easier. In fact, as I understand it, the software provided by the Campaign Finance Board makes those reporting methods very seamless, the electronic reporting very seamless. This would include facsimile transmission, which many people have access to. And the old method, by using telegram or certified mail, has actually allowed some people to use the timing of the reporting to, in many people's opinion, mine included, again, circumvent the spirit of the law, though not the letter of the law. So I think this just creates puts a little more light on the contributions and makes it harder for people to hide large contributions right before the election.
Representative Anderson.
Representative Morgan, I'm just a little concerned, however, though, when you look at the language that you have above that, it's for any one source totaling 1,000 or more. So as you get to some of those smaller BPOUs out in greater Minnesota that maybe don't have the timely access to a fax machine and obviously don't have the time to drive all the way down to St. Paul to report this, have you given some consideration to those folks and they're maybe they don't have access to the technology that we have here in the metropolitan area?
Representative Moore.
I appreciate you raising that concern, Representative Anderson. I have not heard concerns from people who would be in that position. I would appreciate anybody who has that concern to express that to me or the author of the Senate version. Senator Rest hasn't heard those concerns either. Email is something that most people have access to, and again, many people who use the Campaign Finance Board software have direct access to that reporting mechanism within the software.
Representative Anderson. Are there any further questions? Representative Nelson.
My question is slightly different, but the first subdivision, first registration, how is this going to affect, I guess, because I went through it, special election, how is this going to affect someone filing for a special election? I mean, it's, you know, you're in the throes of, in my situation, my representative passed away, and 5 days after she passed away, the governor calls a race, and you decide to jump into it, and it's, you know, the 24 hours, you know, that first 5-6 days or whatever, you're running, you don't even know what you're doing. You're running so fast that you don't know what's going on. And I guess, is this, in effect, we're bringing this to a 24-hour period or a 14-day period, because it says whichever is earlier. And I guess that's just a concern that I had.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, this would only apply if that campaign receives contributions in excess for your campaign, for instance, of the $400 limit. So if you received small contributions, you would not be in that situation. Only if you received a large contribution exceeding the $400 would you have to register and report that contribution within 24 hours.
Representative Nelson.
It says $100 here, but I guess maybe I'm not reading it correctly, but in the
State of Morgan?
Under first registration.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, if you look at the, it says, or within 24 hours after it has received a loan or contribution that must be reported under subdivision 5. So if you go to subdivision 5, it says that the for a legislative election totaling more than $400. And for a statewide candidate would be for $800.
President Nelson, does that answer your question? Any further questions? Any other, anyone wish to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Morgan renews his motion that House File 237 as amended be passed and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thought I saw Representative Mariani. Is he here? There he is. Representative Mariani?
Morning, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Mariani, I will move House File 203 be recommended to pass, and I believe this is going to the General Registry also.
I believe so.
So the bill is before us. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and then explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Carlos Mariani. I represent area, District 65B. In fact, we're sitting in my district, the capital area. Makes up the northern part of my district. I have the downtown area of St. Paul, shoot over the river to what's called the west side. If anyone knows St. Paul, we don't follow the compass points the way other folks do. So the south side is really the west side. Members, this bill came to me from my senator, who's been involved with the CAP board on and off over the years. And basically what it does is it would add two new members to the CAP board, Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board, which has responsibility for planning, architectural planning for the capital area, which is exclusively inside our district, her center district, and my house district. We currently do have in statute the ability for a house member and a senate member to be on the board, but does not specify whether that individual needs to be from, or those individuals need to be from Senate District 65. At times it has been, and at times it hasn't. The issue here really has to do with being able to be in a position where representing the people who live within this district, we're able to respond to inquiries and to the planning efforts of neighborhood groups so that they can coordinate their efforts with the CAP board. Obviously, we don't need to be on the board for them to be able to do that, but we think that it really creates a very real-time, on-time ability to shape the decisions of the CAP board, keeping in mind the planning and the expectations of people who live in the nearby area, and to be able to do that before the fact and not after the fact. So, Mr. Chair, members, it's really as simple as that.
Representative Mariani, is there anyone who wishes to testify on this bill?
I do not have
any questions. Representative Peterson.
I don't know if you call it a testify, Mr. Chairman. I met with the board last year when they were reviewing the proposal to do the restoration of the Capitol. And I know that many of the people who were most invested in that report were the neighboring churches and the neighboring community. And, you know, I think this probably goes a long way towards giving them some confidence that their voice is being heard. And because they would have a shorter string on the local reps than they would have without them on the board. So I would think it would be an improvement.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani, I guess my question would be, why add two members? Why not just change the language of the way it's formed and just have that member be from this district?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative House, we could certainly do that. I think the thinking behind this approach is to make sure that we have room on the table for other folks who are not necessarily tied to the district itself, that all of us, to a large degree, as senators and representatives, should have ownership over these kind of decisions. So it sort of broadens then the ability to have that ownership by individuals who have, like myself, who have a very direct neighborhood connection, but also colleagues beyond our district.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani, I don't have a problem with your bill. I kind of like it, but I'd like it even more if you said one of the members appointed would be from the district and the other would be from rural Minnesota.
Representative Mariani, answer that question.
Mr. Chair, I'm certainly open to that.
Walker area would be fine.
Representative House, does that have the largest number of golf courses in the state?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chairman. And in the past week, it's been very interesting. In the Walker area, we have found some historical artifacts that date back 15,000 years. And our good mayor was quoted in the paper as saying, it's a tourist town. We've proven it. They've been coming here for 15,000 years.
Representative House, you're not claiming that golf started 15,000 years ago.
I believe there was a short piece of wood in the shape of a T.
Representative House, this committee may have to have a hearing there. Representative Mariani, we have a gentleman who wishes to testify. Sir, would you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Mandel. I'm Principal Planner for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. We're fine with this legislation. There is actually precedent. The mayor has three appointees, as you see, and one of those appointees must be a resident in the district. So there is precedent for this kind of a structure. We'd also welcome the additional legislative involvement in our board, because as you know, or as some of you know, from having been on committees that where we've come to you for funding, either for capital operations or for a capital building, we have zoning jurisdiction over 60 block area in the heart of downtown here, and have the major responsibility for the capital building restoration. So we always welcome the additional eyes and support.
Members, any further? Representative Hilty, did you have a question?
No.
Representative Anderson.
Do the members of, Representative Mariani, do the members of this commission, do they get a per diem of some sort? Is this going to be an added cost with the additional two members?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, Representative, we haven't met yet.
Representative Anderson.
Anderson,
pleasure to meet you, Representative. My understanding is that there is no per diem involved, and perhaps we can check with our counsel here. And while we do that, Mr. Chair, I do want to raise another issue for us. I'm not trying to undermine my own bill, but I did get word from counsel earlier that there are sort of bigger issues here that perhaps this committee might want to think about in terms of appointees to commissions as it relates to legislators. We sort of have some level of inconsistency at the state in which we do that, and perhaps Mr. Shepherd can share a little bit with us.
Mr. Shepherd, how much do you wish to share?
Mr. Chair, members, on the Representative Mariani another member raised the question about the per diem, and the statute does provide for payment of per diem, and perhaps Mr. Mandel could answer. I don't know if the board pays the legislators per diems or if the House pays the legislators per diems for service on this board.
Mr. Chair, for the legislators, the House or the Senate would take care of that because they're technically on duty legislatively.
Yeah, Representative Mariani, is that the only issue you wish to have Mr. Shepherd address? I ask cautiously.
Mr. Chair, that goes to the heart of Representative Anderson's question.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Any further questions? Representative Anderson.
I, with all due respect to Representative Peterson and House, I actually like it when we have other legislators outside of the St. Paul area on this board. I think our capital is not just a treasure to the people of St. Paul, it's a treasure to the entire state. And so I would encourage you to keep it with having other representatives outside of here. And then my other question is, I'm a little concerned. Now, the mayor of St. Paul, they appoint three members, and I would hope that the people of the community feel comfortable in going to those members, and rather than having two additional members added to this board, I'm just wondering if it's really if it's necessary or if we're just adding more onto this when we don't we don't need to because the representation is there on the board.
Representative Marianne.
Mr. Chair, I think a couple points. One is that the way the bill or the proposal is drafted, it certainly encompasses your desire to have, because we're not removing the ability for other appointees outside of this area from the legislature. In regards to the other issue, I do think that I do think the neighbors have a lot of confidence with the mayor's appointees and their level of involvement that way. The issue here really has to do with none of those individuals sit in your seat or my seat. And we're the ones who ultimately have oversight over this board with appropriations, and we often hear directly from them on their future design plans. So it's really a position where we can influence to a large degree up front as opposed to after the fact.
Any further questions? Representative Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mandel, I understand there might be some significant activity surrounding this complex, both inside and out, on the drawing board, at the least, in the next decade. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is correct. We have plans that we're working on right now. We are halfway through schematic for the Capitol building itself. And we do have some significant plans that we'll be testifying to this session and for the coming sessions. Part of our charge is also over the 60-block area surrounding the state capitol. So you will see us occasionally testify on state buildings. We have a zoning jurisdiction in those 60 blocks. We also supervise and are responsible for the design and siting of memorials. So we have like four memorials at this time. The Humphrey Memorial, Minnesota Workers Memorial, Firefighters Memorial, and are working on the legislatively required Hmong Veterans Memorial statue. So you'll hear us on various occasions speaking to different charges that we have in the jurisdiction, both state property and non-state property.
Representative Kalin, Representative Kahn's committee, I believe already had a hearing on the architectural plans. They will also present the plans to you in your office. And actually, I would suggest a presentation to you in person first so you can ask any and all questions. It's an extremely impressive series of changes to the Capitol. So I would encourage you to do that. And this committee may also have a presentation on the plans.
I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Kiff.
I guess the reason for asking my question, I'm a little bit hesitant to continue to expand commissions and boards all the time, and not only in terms of per diem and other expenses, but just having worked on ad hoc and formal committees that add more members, and then it becomes harder to reach consensus. And to, but I think given the activity that's on the both on the drawing board, but also looking ahead, I think it's appropriate to support the additions that Representative Mariani is bringing. I do hope that perhaps after some significant work is complete on the campus, on a complex, that this body might revisit whether the addition of the members is a good idea for moving forward. I just think it's a good idea to always think about, and I'm not suggesting an amendment, but just something for us to be conscious of, to look at the effectiveness of everybody that we are adding and changing.
Mr. Mandel.
Mr. Chair, on behalf of the Cap Board and Department of Administration, we would love to personally visit with each of you and give you a full presentation on our proposals. You'll be hearing a lot more about it. You saw it in the session weekly 2 weeks ago, and we think it's an exciting plan that moves this Capitol building. I mean, it was, at the time it was built, it was the state of the art, and it was the first building in St. Paul that was fully electrified, state of the art at that time, and today you can't say the same thing, but it's clearly one of the top five capitals in the country.
Mr. Thank you for the offer, and I do highly recommend that you visit with the members. It's a very impressive half-hour discussion.
Thank you.
Any other Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, going a little bit off of what Representative Kalin mentioned on the per diem, since we've had this conversation, I would love it if you would make it so that the two additional members would not receive per diem.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I think that's probably outside the scope of this particular bill. I think members are entitled to per diem in carrying out their formal responsibilities as legislators. And so it may open up another area of discussion and oversight here that that I was intending to get into with this particular little bill.
Mr. Mendez.
Mr. Chair, before we, Representative Anderson, before we get into creating too big of an issue here, our board for the past 4 years, due to budget cuts, has been a part-time agency, and we have we struggle to cover roughly 3 to 4 meetings a year. So I don't want to make the per diem issue into too big an issue. We sometimes have subcommittees meet, but it's a rare occurrence that you would have more than a half a dozen meetings in a year.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Could I perhaps get some advice from Mr. Shepherd on what would be the appropriate avenue to take along this line, along these lines?
Representative Anderson, yes. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson members, if the committee wished to prohibit legislative members from receiving per diem for service on this board, I would suggest a sentence that would state that legislative members of the board may not receive per diem from the board or from the House of Representatives or the Senate for service on this board. I would obviously write that down.
Mr. Shepherd. Yes, you would write that down. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, considering we have that advice, is that something that you would be amenable to your bill that you have here, since we are able to do that?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, not at this point. No.
Representative Emmer, you had a question.
I did.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the representative, or the person representing the planning board. You said because of planning, or because of budget cuts, you barely are able to cover 4 meetings a year. Could you tell me, so I have some perspective, what kind of budget are we dealing with here, and why, when you talk about budget cuts, do you have a hard time covering 4 meetings a year for a capital planning board?
Mr. Chair, we have our budgets were cut approximately 25% 4 years ago, and so our agency operates on a part-time basis. We have 4 staff people. We used to have 5. We now have 4 people, and we all operate. We are closed every other Friday during the year. We have cut back on, I mean, right now we have, we've limited the number of computers that we have. We have not updated our phone systems. The board, because we do cover travel expenses for the board members, you know, if they're coming from outstate, we have one member that comes from outstate. The mailings, when we have conditional use permits or variances, we do mailings to the affected property owners, et cetera, just like any zoning board. So we've pared back in every way. Our architectural advisors meetings, we hold them less frequently and take them longer because those, by contract, are on a per diem basis. So we're usually down to about 4 board meetings a year. Or, you know, in a case of a zoning issue comes up and we need to fulfill the 60-day state rule, then we'll have a meeting at that time, too. But
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir. But the question that I wanted answered was, what is your budget? And then as you were just talking now, it raised another one. That we passed a law within the last 2 years for boards like yours, I believe, that allows people to attend from outstate Minnesota by way of video conference hookup, as opposed to having to drive to travel to the St. Paul. I'm wondering if you've taken advantage of that, and what is your budget that we're dealing with?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Our budget current. Our budget in the past biennium was $262,000 a year. We have not been able to update our website to the point that we can do anything other than announce our board meetings, and we'll post things like our comp plan and zoning ordinance by link. We've not been able to update the website even any further than that, though.
Mr. Representative Emmer.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. This one's for Representative Mariani. Have we looked at taking this outside, rather than having a department that looks at updating the capital, have we looked at outsourcing into the private sector, having a private firm bid this on an hourly basis and do it that way?
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, not to my knowledge. I don't know.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Chairman, a little bit about the history of the CAP Board. The CAP Board was instigated at the, and I'm sorry I came late, if this was said, I apologize, but the city of St. Paul were the people who distinctly wanted this because of the outrage, I guess, of the Veterans Service Building, which totally ruined Cass Gilbert's plan for the architecture of the city and the Capitol. And I think it's a very bad idea to start picking out specific issues that legislators will not get per diem for. I think the legislators use their best judgment in when they ask for per diem, and I think the leadership of the House and Senate uses their best judgment about when they give it. And I would doubt that attending these meetings are the worst abuse of per diem claims that one would see in the history of the legislature. So I don't know if an amendment is being offered, but I would certainly oppose it.
Representative Kahn, there is no amendment before the committee. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mariani, I hope that you'll consider the per diem suggestion that Representative Anderson has made. You know, the purpose is for per diem is to just make sure that people are taken care of in terms of their travel and meals, and that certainly isn't the case if you're this close to the Capitol in terms of representation. So I think in order to make a non-issue, it may be worth at least talking or thinking about making a move in that direction. And when we talk about per diem, individually, you're right. You know, individually, they're little pieces of the pie, but those individual pieces of the pie stack up to a very significant budgetary expenditure that we have at the state level. And so I don't think that they're insignificant, whether it's one meeting or 100 meetings, because the stacking effect is I think, something of significance that we have to deal with on an expenditure basis.
Representative Kahn.
Representative Brogue. What is this very significant expense of legislative per diem out of session? Could you tell me what the number is?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Kahn, I'd be happy to find the budgetary expenditures for the House and the Senate and provide that to you. But $66 a day, $77 a day, whatever it is, it's not insignificant because it's coming from taxpayers.
Any further discussion?
No.
Representative
Kahn. We heard it was not an insignificant proportion of the budget, I think was the exact words. I guess I'd like to know. I'm just trying to, one of the things I like to deal with is what one calls the innumeracy of public officials. And innumeracy is the mathematical equivalent of illiteracy. So I may be wrong, or Representative Broad may be wrong, but I would like when people use numbers to get those numbers on the table, to just as a lesson in numeracy instead of innumeracy.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair and members, and I think we're probably close to a vote here, I just want to focus this back on the intention of this bill, which is really just to make sure that there is a stronger, more vital connection between the surrounding community and the CAP Board via those members' representation directly on this body. It seems to me it's good public policy to make sure that whatever we do here physically aligns with the hopes and dreams and aspirations of the surrounding community, and that's really our only intent here with this bill. And Mr. Chair, just one other thing, in response to Representative House's earlier inquiry about rural Minnesota, my only request would be to make sure that we don't have anyone from St. Peter on the CAP Board, because given our history 100 and some years ago, that might prove to be disastrous.
And on that note, seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 203 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Marion. The next bill up is House File 13. Representative, I saw Representative Tingle said there she is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Peterson.
I'm going to move House File 13, Kathy Tinglestead's bill. But I understand that lines 1.22, 23, and 24 were removed in the Senate, and therefore, with my motion for approval, I would also offer the oral motion that lines 1.22, 1.23, and 1.24 be crossed out and eliminated.
Representative Peterson, I'm going to see if Mr. Shepard has that before.
Yeah. And as he's checking on it, it would go to State Government Finance.
Mr. Shepard, do you have it?
Mr. Chair, I would just add one small technical change on line page 2, line 1, just to renumber, reletter that paragraph as
right.
B.
Right, yes, please.
All right.
C would become B, Mr.
Representative Peterson has his motion before us. Representative Tinglestad, would you present your bill, please? And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Peterson, for making that motion. Appreciate it. Members, you have the handout that's come around. This relates to the legislative training forum that was held this year. And this House File 13 deals with training forums for next year at the legislature. And actually, we had this training in the State Government Finance Bill last year and moved through the process, got to the governor's desk. He actually line item vetoed this part of it, but not because of the topic, more so because of there was legislative carry forward funds within the legislature, and he felt that we should use our carry forward funds before we go to a general fund. So with this, we'd like to get this back in with our statutes here and actually institutionalize the legislative forums. Members who have been here for several years are familiar with the old Horizon series, and this is somewhat related to that, but as I was chair of GovOps last year, I saw through many of our state agencies that they have training programs for their employees, and felt it was appropriate that we institutionalize training for our members, especially since so many legislators come from a variety of backgrounds, and also based on the turnover here at the legislature. As you know, we have about 25% new members this session alone between House and Senate. So with that, basically the bill looks at putting together this it would actually be like a one-day conference, perhaps followed up by training forums, and actually you'll be getting some information in the email soon about two skills-building trainings that will be happening in February this year. But like I say, this bill specifically deals with 2008, and similar to the conference that was held with at the University of Minnesota on January 9th, this process would do the organizational part so that we could bring together all the legislators to hear about sort of large-scale topics that the legislature would be facing, and then through the evening forum sessions looking at specific skills training for legislators. And Mr. Chair and members, with me here today is Diane Cushman, who was a vital part of the January 9th training that we had this year, and we're available for questions.
Representative Tinglestad, before we do that, Representative Peterson, it's my understanding that this bill could go directly to finance rather than state government finance, mm-hmm. So do you wish to amend your motion to send it there?
Yes,
rather than...
Yes, I would.
Okay. So Mr. Shepard, please amended his motion in that fashion. All right, welcome to the committee, and then please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Diane Cushman with the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and my role in both a new member orientation that occurred in November and December, and then the January 9th all-legislative conference was one of kind of central coordination and trying to bring all the planners together and keep things moving ahead. So I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tinglestad, I certainly appreciate the work that you've done in the as a first-term member in the pre-session training, and I also thought that the day that we spent over at the Humphrey Institute and the Carlson School of Business was very valuable. But I do have a couple of concerns here. I have heard from my constituents, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, particularly considering the conversations about Representative Mariani's bill, about per diem. and I didn't even take the increase in per diem from the last time, and I'm sure there are many who chose not to around here because we're being sensitive to our constituents. But here we have a bill, and this will be one of the first bills out that we're spending money, and who are we spending it on? We're spending it on ourselves. I guess my question to you would be, how would you answer a question about that from your constituents, and are you concerned about that?
Representative Engelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, I appreciate that question because it is obviously a concern. You know, I think it's really important to look at what we do for our state agencies, and that we are also state employees, and that education is an important part of what we do here, as well as getting to know other members of the legislature. And so, as you can see here, the appropriation is about $20,000, so it's a pretty minor amount of money, in the big picture of, a $34 billion state budget that we look at, certainly much less than any of the per diem amounts. And, because these sessions, these trainings are held during the legislative session, there's no additional per diem for members. So, that's certainly not a consideration as far as the timing of this. But how I look at it is it's an investment in the process here. And actually, it was kind of instigated based on after we had the government shutdown. We took ideas from legislators and staff during that very painful summer long session that we were at. And one of the things they said is legislators need more time to get to know each other and do some skills building. And so this actually was a result of that very painful government shutdown situation. And we're hoping that this is one small step in the program so that we can avoid future government shutdowns.
Representative Morgan.
Hey.
Representative Potter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Engelstad, I just have a couple of questions. One is, last year it was $30,000 you were requesting, this year $20,000. Could you tell me specifically how those costs would be, how you came up with those dollars, I guess, since you've adjusted it a little bit, and what that money would directly be spent for?
Representative Engelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppe, good question. With this appropriation, it's the $20,000 for the legislative forums in 1 year. Last year, we were looking at $30,000 for 2 years. We've just done some adjustments for what the actual costs were. The program that we had out at the University of Minnesota, the costs that the legislature had involved were, I believe, around about $15,000. And so there is a way in here where there could be some foundations or other groups that could help contribute to the cost. So we thought with that in mind and doing a couple of these skills building sessions that we'd be right around the $20,000 amount for a 1 year, like a full day and a couple of evening trainings.
Representative Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tengelstad, I guess I was just looking a little bit more specifically as far as presentations, speakers, facilities, food, whatever kinds of costs, more of a breakdown, I guess, on how those are spent for those things.
Representative Tengelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppe, certainly we can get you that. Sorry we don't have it available right now, but we do have the breakdown from this year's conference, and so those are the types of expenses involved, obviously.
Okay. Representative Holt.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Tengelstad, what percent of legislators participated, and what percent of the surveys were returned? The big picture is how do we value it, how do we measure it?
Representative Engelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilson, good question. We had about 160 legislators out of the 201 who came to the Humphrey Institute event on January 9th, so we thought that was pretty good participation. And we didn't do any kind of evaluations or surveys afterwards. That was one thing that sort of slipped through the cracks in our changeover of leadership. We started planning this session last July or so, and had some transition things to get through this fall. But we plan on doing some follow-up emails with people to look at suggestions for ideas next year. So certainly you know, evaluating that will be an important piece. We did have an after-action meeting with the organizers and kind of looked at, you know, what went well, what could be improved for next time around.
Representative Poppy, I apologize. I think you had another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did. That's okay. I guess another question, and it's really about what right now the Legislative Commission, you mentioned that you do some orientation, and I was aware of that because I participated in that last time. I'm just wondering what other kinds of legislative informational sessions or seminars are provided through the Commission, and maybe if there's another amount of what generally is the cost that gets spent on legislators' seminars?
Representative Tinglestad?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy, I'll give you some information, and I think maybe Ms. Cushman would like to add some things here. And actually, we're keeping this sort of separate from freshman orientation. You know, I just happen to be, you know, on the organizing team for both of those. But there isn't actually any other kind of official legislative training. I mean, this would be it, basically, as far as what is generated, you know, from the legislature, from the LCC and among members. I don't know, Ms. Cushman, maybe you have some more information.
Mr. Chair and Representative, to my knowledge, this is the first time the LCC, as sort of a nonpartisan entity in the legislature, has gotten involved in legislative training. The House has a 10-year history of doing new member orientation after each election. That's both a one-day in the chamber, sort of the basic welcome to the legislature, and then the three-day intensive, this is how to do the job, and this is the way bills are made into law and such. The Senate historically has done only the one day in the chambers and has never done a three-day. This last year was the first day, the first year for the Senate to do that, and certainly the first time for the House and Senate to do it together on a bipartisan basis. Then we move forward to the first or second week of session, and historically there have been a number of attempts to get the two bodies together for one or two days to do a conference that takes a higher level, you know, like a 10,000-foot look at what are the challenges and issues facing the state of Minnesota now and in the future. That conference has sort of been on hiatus for the past 5 years. And this one-day conference, when it became a reality as we moved forward, it was clear that there was a need to have somebody sort of keep it moving, given all of the changes with the last election. Change in leadership in the House, change in leadership in the Senate, and just trying to have a nonpartisan entity that didn't change with the elections sort of keep hold of this and shepherd it through. And then I guess out of members saying they wanted some additional training, we're looking at these evening sessions, very short, 90-minute sessions, where we focus on specific skills that particularly freshmen have indicated they're interested in learning more about. And this year we're looking at possibly doing two of those. So that's the extent of my knowledge. And to my knowledge, the Legislative Coordinating Commission has not been involved. It's been folks like Representative Tinglestad who've said, I'm interested in this and I'm willing to take some time to do this. So that's how it's been done in the past.
Representative Poppy, is it? Representative Tinglestad, you want to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, just to add real quickly, I serve on the NCSL National Committee of Legislative Effectiveness. Actually, I'm the vice chair nationally. And so I see what is done in other states, and many other states do programs similar to this. This one is specifically modeled after the state of Georgia, who's been doing programs like this for about 50 years. And so we're really seeing, an effort across the country to do more specific training like this with all legislators and really to institutionalize it, too, which is why we're looking at the Legislative Coordinating Commission in this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final comment or question maybe. It would be just to probably get, and I'm sure it's available, more information about the cost associated with it and then the orientation or whatever, because it may be that we should actually be looking at a more formal budget that really does lay these out and say this is what it is. And then the other piece of that is, I know that you've got some information in here about accepting donations from foundations and others, and I guess I'd really be reluctant to take money out of general fund, but would certainly recommend trying to find foundation dollars or other dollars that maybe would help to enhance the learning, but also be able to soften the pocketbook issues. Thanks.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tingelstad, my understanding is that we already do this, and the question is, how long have we been doing it? And how has it been paid for? I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer. I was not involved with the Horizon series. That was early in my legislative career here, and it's been on hiatus for several years. I understand that it was mainly Senate staff who did some of the organizational pieces on this. This year, we paid for the one-day event as well as the upcoming two evening trainings with legislative carry-forward dollars. Specifically in this bill, we're looking at institutionalizing this program so that this issue is looked at every year instead of just, sort of random legislators working on it. I should mention, too, that Senator Sheila Cascaden was an important part of the planning of this event, and as you know, she's retired, so certainly we'd like projects like this to continue over time instead of just relying on, a few legislators who are, interested in organizing it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tingelstad, you might have answered my second question. And if I heard within what you just said, if I heard correctly, the reason that you believe we should be putting this in statute is because you want to institutionalize it. Is that right?
Representative Tingelstad.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, that is an important part of it, yes.
All right. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
Right now, this is voluntary for legislators. That's my understanding. Is there some plan that eventually this is going to be a mandatory thing?
Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Emmer. No, I don't see it as ever being mandatory, although we kind of joke with freshman orientation. We always tell the freshmen that's mandatory, but just like the position here being like self-employed business owners, it's certainly up to us, and we're all looking to our voters as far as responsibilities for showing up, for votes and other things here at the legislature. So, no, I could never see it as anything that is mandatory, and I would think of it as similar to a committee meeting where you could be excused or, if you're not there, it's not going to, count against you or anything like that.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then the question I have for you is why aren't we looking at charging a fee? Because it seems to me that legislators who come here to St. Paul come with a whole variety of talents, abilities, both intellectual and other. And some find these offerings very helpful, and others find them a complete waste of time. And if that sounds harsh, I apologize. But my question is, why don't we look at charging the legislators that find this to be very helpful rather than creating an institutionalized organization that's going to run on its own like everything else around here tends to, and it will continue to grow like a bad tumor? Why don't we look at charging, for instance, here, you said you had 160 people who voluntarily responded. You said the costs were about $15,000. I'm not very good at math. Since I'm an attorney, I can only divide by three, but it looks like it would have been a charge of $93.75 per legislator that found this to be very helpful. And my question, and then I think I might have a proposed amendment, would be, have you given that some thought rather than suddenly having this thing run on autopilot?
Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer, that's a good point, and certainly we have given it some thought. This is one of those things that we looked at as an organizing group as basic training for legislators. And similar to freshman orientation, where there are no costs to participate, we did not think it was appropriate to do that in this case as well. And as you know, there are other things that legislators are invited to, usually in evenings during the legislative session where we have to pay for things. And, you know, I think there's a lack of participation because of some of those costs involved, and certainly, you know, that's a choice for people. It's something we could look into with this, the way it's proposed. But with what we did on January 9th, we were looking at it from the point of view that it would be similar to freshman orientation where there's not a fee.
Right. Representative,
Before I offer my proposed amendment, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like, so everybody understands, Representative Tingelstad and I may have a difference of opinion, but I can't emphasize enough how much I respect the work that she does in this area. I mean, I think anybody who knows Kathy understands that she puts a ton of time into setting these things up and that this is very important to her. So by my comments, Representative Tingelstad, I honestly don't mean any disrespect, which is why I asked you about this yesterday. But we do have a difference of opinion because I look at it as if it's valuable enough that people want it, they will pay for it. And again, I have major concerns, and I think Representative Callan, who's new here, pointed out very eloquently earlier that, you know, we need to be real careful with stuff like this because we keep creating these little mini bureaucracies that tend to grow, and then we probably have Representative Mariani in a couple of years adding a couple more members to this LCC thing. My proposed amendment, Mr. Chairman, would be that we delete Section 2, and that we add a subpart C that would read as follows. The LCC may charge individual members a fee to be determined based on cost.
Mr. Shepard, do you have it and does it work?
Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer and members, yes, I think that amendment, as I understand it, would work, that it would delete Section 2 and
amazing.
Insert a new paragraph that would authorize the LCC to charge a fee to individual members. The question for the author of the amendment would be whether he would want the fee receipts to be appropriated back to the LCC for purposes of the section so they could use the money they collected.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Shepard, I think we'd have to do that. So if you have specific language, if that's what it is, that the receipts, that the receipts get returned back to the LCC so that they can pay the bills. I mean, I'm just trying to have a pay-as-you-go type.
Mr. Shepard, why don't you read the amendment back then with that added language so it's clear what we're... And you have moved your amendment, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so that is the motion that is now before us. So, Mr. Shepard, would you read the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe Representative Emmer's amendment would read as follows. Delete Section 2 and page 2 after line 7, or after line 7, insert a new paragraph, which would be paragraph C, and it would read, the Legislative Coordinating Commission may charge a fee to individual legislators who attend forums under this section. Fee receipts are appropriated to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for purposes of this section. And I do have that written down for the Committee of Legislative Assistance.
Representative Tingelstad, do you want to tell us your view on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll leave it up to the will of the committee, but just an issue to consider is the planning committee not knowing for sure how many people will attend, and certainly if there's a fee, I would think that there would be fewer people who would attend. And so as far as overhead costs for the event, how do you plan that ahead, not knowing what the revenue piece would be on that element? So that would certainly be a consideration. The other element is, you know, we are state employees, and other state agencies do similar training for their employees. So you might be looking at a precedent-setting issue here as far as other state agencies charging to internally train their own staff.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unless there's further discussion, delay these proceedings, out of my respect for the author and the work that she has done in this area, I will respectfully withdraw my oral amendment at this time, but I'd like to make it very clear that if this does resurface, for instance, in a bill on the floor of the House, that that would be my intent to bring the amendment at that time. And I thank you for listening to me.
Representative Member withdraws his amendment. I have Representative Kahn has been anxiously waiting. Representative Kahn.
So I just want to tell a little story about the possible need for training, and I know I've probably told it to some people individually, but I don't think I've... When I was first elected in 1972, there wasn't any training. I don't even think we got tickets for the House floor for to be sworn in for relatives and so forth. I think they just... But anyway, Linda Bergwin, who was elected at the same year as I was, and I were kind of wandering around somewhere late in the year trying to figure out where offices were and what to do and that sort of thing. And we met a friend of ours who was on then Lieutenant Governor Perpich's staff. He said, oh, I'll take you to the most important place, the reviser's office. So he took us up to the reviser's office, introduced us to the reviser, a person named Joe Bright, who is one of the most famous historic revisers of all time in the country. And he greeted us very cordially and, you know, said how glad he was to see us. And he then assigned us to someone to go show us how the reviser's office worked, one of the women who worked there. And so, you know, that was typing and mimeograph machines and no computers and things like that. So she's showing us each station and how bills get drafted and that sort of thing. And then at some point in the tour, she turns to us and says, are you girls going to be working here? And so Linda looked, we both sort of looked at each other, and Linda said, well, we're elected representatives. And she then said, oh, how interesting. That was the extent of our orientation. So I think this is a really good idea.
Representative Kahn, thank you for your story. I think you have repeatedly demonstrated the need for legislative training.
Aren't you glad, Mr. Chairman, that the new legislators are so much better trained than I ever was?
Representative Kahn, I think you've illustrated that, too. So I have on my list Representative Olson.
I don't know what I'm going to display, Mr. Chairman.
To the bill, Representative Olson.
Oh, I'll pass that. No.
Thank you.
You ain't seen nothing, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Tinglestad. I too appreciate the work you've done. I've been to some of these things, and in fact, I've been to many of them, and noticed how active you are in this area. My experience with that, though, I'd like to use that to highlight line 4 on page 2. And line 6, in the language here, we have no registered lobbyist or principal shall contribute for this purpose. And if you look at our laws, you'll see that when lobbyists or principals cannot contribute, corporations cannot either. And there's an apparent inconsistency there. And that should be highlighted in the context of line 14 on page 1, an overview of the issues affecting Minnesota. I think something that tempers the concern I raised on page 2 is to add the words objective and comprehensive overview of the issues. I wonder what you would think of that, Representative Tinglestad.
Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, so it sounds like you might be offering that as an oral amendment. I think that would be a good improvement to the bill.
Representative Olson, are you offering that as an amendment?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair. On line, page 1, line 14, after the word "and," insert the words objective and comprehensive.
Mr. Shepard, would you again make sure that the amendment works and then explain it to us?
Mr. Chair, members, as Representative Olson stated, the amendment would be on page 1, line 14, between the words and overview, to insert objective and comprehensive, and I believe that technically fits.
Any further discussion on the Olson amendment? All those in favor? Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question to Representative Olson as far as the word comprehensive. You know, the one-day training is a six-hour, you know, training. I don't know how comprehensive we can be in that amount of time, and What is that going to be measured against as far as if we succeeded or not?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Representative Singleton and Mr. Chair. I thought about just using the word objective. I just thought that the word comprehensive with the word objective would be a little more complete. And it because we have such a tendency here to really pull on one side of an issue and not really be complete, I thought that the word was just helpful to expand upon the reason for the word objective. It's not, I'm not intending to add language that would then make this be a week-long session or anything like that. I understand your concern, but I don't think it means that we really have to go more than a day.
Representative Tinkleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson. I'm thinking maybe perhaps the word thorough would be a little more accurate than comprehensive. You know, certainly it's all in the definition of what those words are, but leave it to the will of the committee. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Tinglestad, and the word that's real important to me is the word objective.
Right.
Beyond that, you know, I'm on. Mm-hmm.
So, Representative Olson, we still have the same amendment before us.
If the author of the bill would prefer thorough, I'll just incorporate that and change it. And just let me note, Mr. Chair, if I may, even foundations have their own goals and purposes, and their money can really influence this as well. So I think having good language to really make it clear that when they're donating, it cannot be just their views represented, because there's our foundations that have particular views and agendas, and I think it's vitally important that, especially if we end up with a kind of a captive audience.
Mr. Shepherd, to Representative Olson's point, would you now read the amendment as it has been changed?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Olson's amendment would be on page 1, line 14, after Ann, to insert objective and thorough.
And Representative Tingle said you're agreeable to that.
Yes, Mr. Griffin.
Any further discussion? Representative Wolfiger.
Chair, members, Representative Olson. On page 2, you were bringing up issues of foundation, corporations, individuals, lobbyists, principals. I'm with you on that all the way. I mean, I thought where you were going with this is illegal. And then you went on to add an amendment to simply add objective and thorough, and I don't understand how objective and thorough then alleviates the concerns on page 2. So,
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wolfslager, very good question. It's all in my incremental approach. I'm not known for it often, but I still have the concerns on page 2. What I'm suggesting on page 1 mitigates it a little bit, but I still have the concerns on page 2. I'm highlighting both concerns at the same time and identifying why what I've offered on page 1 is vitally important, but I still hold to the concerns on page 2 of the influence of the finances coming to this process. Your point is well taken.
Representative Holtrek, all right. What is before us is the Olson Amendment. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment passes.
And Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olschlager, I may not have understood your question. Even with my amendment, I think there's reason to say that paragraph C could be deleted.
And with that, Representative Olschlager, I have about 4 or 5 people here who have questions, if you want to respond. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that I have a question there. I may develop into one here in a second, but I am concerned about this, as I mentioned before in my question, and I agree with Representative Emmer. Representative Tinglestad, you and others do great work in this area, and I don't want to belittle that or demean that in any way, shape, or form. But I am concerned that at this point we don't have any budget targets yet. We have no idea yet how much we are going to try to spend on property tax relief, on education, higher ed, health care, all those other things that we heard about this summer. And I agree with Representative Broad that no amount of money is insignificant, even if it is a very small portion of the budget that we spend here at the legislature. So I'm just very concerned that we're planning to move this forward at this point, and I'm not sure that I can support it at this time. Thank you.
Representative Broad, you've been waiting patiently.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're the youngest of eight, you learn to be patient. Mr. Chairman and members, I just wanted to respond to something that Ms. Cushman said in terms of creating a 10,000-foot view of what's going on, not only today but in the future. And I just wanted to use this opportunity to bring out something that's already occurring here at the state legislature with the 2020 conference. There is a group that we do have, and I hope that you all become members of this or of this group. It's a nonpartisan bicameral group, Representative Emmer, and it's really, really intended to look at that 10,000-foot view, what's happening in the future, and how does that impact us today, the demographics, the economics, all those things. What do we need to be doing today to make sure that we're setting ourselves up for success tomorrow? So I just wanted to take this opportunity for a little media plug for the 2020 conference.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Simon. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Tingle said you wanted to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, and I'd just like to point out to members in the packet that you received the agenda included time in the late afternoon for the legislative interest groups to talk about what they do. And so really that was one of the only opportunities I think that legislators are given to see all the different interest groups that are forming informally here around the legislature. And yes, I think 2020 conference is doing a great job, and I'd like to be in line with those actions.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Tingelstad, I'm wondering if you could tell us what other states are doing. I've informally heard you before reference other states, and even today I think you mentioned Georgia. I think I've heard you in the past mention Texas. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what other states are doing, and specifically if you know whether other states have a formal appropriation such as this?
Mm-hmm. Representative Tingelstad.
Good question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Simon. State of Georgia, they actually tie in their freshman orientation along with training. Many states do a five-day training for their freshmen, and maybe on the third or fourth day bring in the rest of the legislators to do more in-depth kind of issue briefings. As far as I know, they do not charge their legislators to attend those. It's considered part of the training, and actually they hold theirs totally before the legislative session begins, so late December, and actually goes over a weekend. It actually goes all day Sunday as well. The state of Texas does something similar to this. I don't have the details right in front of me, but I would be very happy to get that information. I know NCSL, our national group, has a good listing of those types of things that are done. And actually, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Representative Simon for his involvement in co-chairing the freshman orientation. And as you know, this year was the first time that the House and Senate did freshman orientation together, so appreciate all his hard work on that. And as is tradition with freshman orientation, you know, I had been doing it with Representative Margaret Anderson Kelleher for years. It's the majority party who's in charge of freshman orientation for going into the next cycle. So with that, I believe Representative Simon would be leading the next freshman orientation, and I look forward to talking to him about that some more. But thank you for your involvement with that.
Representative Simon. Was there another question? I'm sorry, Representative Kalin. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tingelstad, I share the commendations that have been directed your way today as kind of our dorm mother, and Representative Simon as kind of our dorm father, not to hopefully not to create any strife in your family, Representative. But just, I think our class of 35 really appreciate the hard work that you both put into the freshman orientation. And one of the things that really sticks out in my as I've been thinking about it, my memory of those 4 days is the in-depth discussion that we had with the House fiscal analysts about accounting practices and accounting for inflation, and it was an enlightening discussion. And I think that even for the folks who aren't involved in that discussion, I think that this training for all members, including those members who have served here longer than some of us have been alive, Representative Kahn, and we appreciate your wisdom. I think it's very helpful to get together, especially at the beginning, before we really delve deeply into issues, so that Representative Emery, who has a lot more experience than I do here in the workings and the budgeting process, so that we can hear each other's comments and the fresh perspective of newcomers and the experienced perspective of folks who run meetings around here. Which gets to my point. The $20,000 or whatever ends up coming finally before us on the floor, I see as an investment in making sure that we're on the same page, that we have an opportunity to address the concerns and bias, whether perceived or actual, that Representative Olson is talking about from whoever is participating, so that we can ask those questions together and be on the same page, as it were. You know, I see that as a really wise investment, as we're dealing with a budget that is exponentially larger than that. And I'm just curious, I'd like to follow up on Representative Simon's question about what other states are doing, and specifically you mentioned Georgia, and I'm wondering, I believe that Georgia needs that also is a part-time legislature, I can't remember, but just thinking of the citizen and part-time legislatures around the country, that I imagine that they do invest in this kind of training, you know, so that we don't have professional politicians here, hopefully.
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Callan, yes, I'll be happy to get that information and we'll identify whether it's a full-time or part-time legislature, but I do believe that Georgia is part-time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. And Representative Tingleston, I'd be happy to work with you a little bit to identify maybe what some of the other citizen and part-time legislatures are doing for this valuable training. Thank you.
Representative Tingleston, I'm looking at House File 3762 from last year, and this is your bill, more or less the same bill. And in the appropriation section, you have $30,000. This year, you have $20,000. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why last year it was $30,000 and why this year it's $20,000?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that's related to Representative Poppy's question earlier. So last year's bill was for 2 years. This year's bill is for 1 year, and we did it kind of based on actual costs, and then looking at a one-day event and then a couple of evening skills-building trainings based on our real budget for this year. So what's before you in today's bill is $20,000 for doing it in 2008.
Representative Tingleston, what happened to this bill
when you
were in the majority?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill did get passed through committee, was in state government finance, went to the governor's desk as part of the global finance bill, and this part was actually line item vetoed. And I got the call from the governor's office that day saying, we think it's an okay idea, but we understand that the legislature has carry forward money, and so we'd rather have you take it out of the carry forward money initially. And so,
Representative, yes, you explained that earlier on, and then you attached it to another bill. Is that correct? Did you attach this to House File 3781?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm trying to remember how this all came together. We had a committee bill last year in GovOps that related to legislative reform, so I think it traveled in a couple different ways and changed through conference committee, went into the big finance package at the end. And so
that bill also did not pass, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, the final finance package, the state government finance bill did not pass, but it was a separate finance bill later than that, and it was in that bill.
And just using, and I almost hesitate to say this, because Representative Kahn likes to say it, but the history of the bill fascinated me. So I'd like to trade Representative Kahn.
Yes, which brings up a question about the governor's veto. Was the entire language in the bill, and did the governor veto the entire language? Or, I guess I'm interested in that.
Well, Representative Kahn, if it was a line item veto, he can only veto money.
That's
he cannot veto language.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's what my
Yes.
That's what my question is.
Yeah.
Did the governor, was the entire language in the bill, and did the governor veto more than just the money?
Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, as is usual in omnibus bills, you know, this two-page bill was condensed into, you know, a few sentences.
So,
and it had the appropriations, and yes, the chair is correct that the appropriations part was the part that was line item vetoed.
But
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, so then it was just written essentially as one line. So then it was, I'm getting nods from Mr. Shepard. So it wasn't put into 3.051. It wasn't put into statute. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tingleston.
Representative Kahn, I don't have that in front of me. Yeah. Perhaps Mr. Shepard can help us with that.
All right. Members, we do have one other small function here. Representative Morgan, I believe, has been waiting patiently to enlighten us on the minutes of the last meeting. I'd like to get that done.
We didn't have a quorum at the beginning of the meeting, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'd like to move the minutes of the last meeting.
Representative Morgan moves the minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. And we are now back to Representative Tingleston's bill, as amended. Any further discussion? Representative Pop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was discussing with Mr. Emmer, Representative Emmer, his suggested amendment that he has since taken off the table, but I'm just offering that if that does come before us and we actually would find that we'd need to pay something for this, I would just suggest having continuing ed units or other kinds of things associated with it. Some of us have other jobs that require us to have training in certain areas, and it might be something that would allow us to be able to use those dollars if we pay for something and actually could show that we got something in exchange. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy, that's a good point.
Representative Tingleston. Members, it came to my attention, too. We did not actually approve Representative Peterson's amendment. So, Mr. Shepard, let's go through what exactly is before us with Representative Peterson's amendment. And then, that one we did, but yours was the initial motion on the bill, and there was a clarification as to where it was going to go. So let's have that.
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Peterson's amendment at the beginning of the discussion was to, on page 1, to delete lines 22 to 24, and then on page 2, to change the lettering of paragraph C to paragraph B.
And then, Mr. Shepard, I believe he also moved the bill, and he now wishes the bill to go to finance. Is that correct? So should the motion prevail, this bill would go to the finance committee. So that is the motion before us. Okay, first motion. First motion's on the amendment. All those in favor of the Peterson amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The bill then is amended, and then the Peterson motion is to re-refer it as amended to the Finance Committee. Representative Olson, you have a question.
Thank you,
question.
Mr. Chair. I just want to quickly highlight the concerns that I still do have, Representative Tingleston, because I really am concerned about the language in paragraph C. And it dawned on me with Representative Poppy's comments as well as Representative Wolfslager's comments that, and combined with Representative Ember's amendment, is that if members are required to pay something, it mitigates some of these concerns because of the environment that it creates, these finance concerns, because of the environment it creates, in that members aren't going to want to pay for something that's very skewed and feel like they're going somewhere to just simply hear an agenda. But very objective information, very informative, is valuable. I like to hear all sides of issues. I love to hear it. I like to wrestle with issues. People complain that I do that here. But nonetheless, I just want to highlight that because I still think this needs to be looked at. We need to think about this some more, especially the corporations. But foundations also have that concern. And maybe in finance that can be looked at further and you consider again the possibility of having members pay something for it. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing no discussion, then Representative Peterson renews his motion on House File 13 be passed as amended and recommended to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay.
No.
Nay. Motion does not prevail, meaning is